Welcome back, everyone, to Millard and Micah, A Star Wars Story. My name is Amanda Millwood, and I'm a screenwriter, actor, director, and a huge fan of Star Wars.
And my name's Todd Micah. I'm the author of the Grimguard book series, and we have never watched all the Star Wars movies in order with anyone until now. If you've been following along with our podcast, then you know that we, huge Star Wars nerds that we are, have been watching all the Star Wars movies to rate and review them. And today, we have arrived at Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones.
Oh boy.
I was going to say, we're really hitting the high notes for you, aren't we, Amanda? Like, we're really just capturing your favorite ones right off the bat, aren't we?
I don't mind this one. Is not, at least I like this one a lot more than Phantom Menace. I'll watch this over Phantom Menace any day of the week. But yeah, it's still very much on the very low end of my list. But Phantom Menace is the only Star Wars movie that I genuinely do not like. So that kind of, you know, sets the stage.
Yeah, this movie is actually, Attack of the Clones is actually my mom's favorite prequel movie. We were actually discussing it at dinner tonight. Yeah. We were discussing at the dinner tonight how Attack of the Clones kind of falls like somewhere between the extremities of like the Phantom Menace being really kiddie and silly and like the Revenge of the Sith being really heavy and really dark. And somewhere in the middle, right, it's like Attack of the Clones kind of bouncing back and forth between the two from time to time. So,
right.
Let's get into a couple stats on the movie itself. Attack of the Clones was released May 16th. 2002. You realize that is 22 years ago. Amanda, yep. you just hit a birthday, by the way. Happy 26th birthday.
Thank you. Yeah, officially closer to 30 than 20. Love that for me.
How does it feel to be ancient?
Oh god, I can't even describe. It's wild. But yeah, I would have been 4 years old when this movie released, and I never saw this movie in theaters. I was too young, and I don't think I would have liked it if I'd seen it at 4 years old. But I do remember seeing, I think it was like trailers or some kind of footage of the movie, and being like obsessed with Padme's outfits. Like that was the only thing I cared about because I was super into Barbie when I was a kid. So like I loved fashion and like all that. So every time I saw like a poster or a trailer for the movie, I was like, ooh, pretty dress. And that was the only thing I took away from it.
I mean, admittedly, commercials for Attack of the Clones were like everywhere. Like the Phantom Menace, there was a lot of toy ads for the Phantom Menace, but there were tons of just like the commercials for the movie were there. And yeah, there's a lot of tie-ins there. So every commercial break when I was 16, about to be 17 years old, Todd, the age gap between us like is really apparent while we're talking about the prequels and we're talking about how old we were at the time.
Right.
But yeah, good old 2002. What a good year. What a time. What a summer that was. Man, there was nothing like being a teenager about to go watch this like the sweatiest Star Wars film where the characters are just looking like just their best.
The sweat. Like this.
It was a hot summer. I was about to go watch Natalie Portman bare her midriff in movie theaters while I'm chowing down on popcorn. Okay, this was a time to be alive. Yeah. This was great.
That's half
the movie theater had no idea who Palpatine was in relation to Sidious. Like no one knew. No one knew. It was amazing. It was a great time to be alive. It wasn't a great time to be a Star Wars fan, though, because so on the note of the writing, boy, oh boy, the writing in this movie, Attack of the Clones was written by George Lucas and Jonathan Hales. And well, I don't know if you knew this, Amanda. So there's a story regarding why another writer was brought on board for this. So George Lucas actually, in the backlash in the fandom, the unexpected backlash from fans about the Phantom Menace and the writing in the movie, he actually was really, really uncertain how to proceed with Attack of the Clones. He's like, what do I do? Everyone hated what I did in the Phantom Menace. So like, what do I do? And it actually took him until 3 months before the principal photography was about to start shooting to finish the first draft of the script. So he pulled in Jonathan Hales, who's writer for primarily, like, you can tell he was an inside Lucasfilm guy because he wrote for the Young Adventures of Indiana Jones series. But he also wrote, you know, truly the Academy Award winning film, The Scorpion King. Yeah, totally. Like, we all remember
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yes, exactly. And if you can write a movie for Dwayne The Rock Johnson, he can write one for Ewan McGregor. Like, you know. Right. Yeah. Well, I feel like this is some big indication, though, of the way this movie is written, which I'll talk a lot about in this review. But the script was done 1 week before filming began. And so no one had a finished version of the script until just then.
Yeah, I'd like to think, or I'd like to imagine that, you know, this in a different universe, like, it's one of those movies where, yeah, the production was a total shit show, but we got a great product at the end somehow. But no, like, I love this movie, but it's garbage.
And that's really, I think, the big thing to say about it, which I'll say in just a second. Attack of the Clones was directed by none other than the man responsible for everything, George Lucas, and the official IMDb rating for Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, is 6.6 out of 10, just marginally higher than the previous movie, Phantom Menace, which I think was a 6.3, if I remember correctly.
0.5. I'm pretty sure it was only like a single...
Was it 0.5? I think one. You're right. I think you're right. Phantom Menace is 6.5, Attack of the Clones 6.6. Here's the thing. Before we get real, real deep, just one thing. Attack of the Clones, I really do enjoy the movie for the sake that it is such a big, like, popcorn, blockbuster, watch stuff blow up, watch hot people on screen, like, movie. If your demands on it are not very high, it's so much fun.
Right. Yeah, and that's definitely why I like it much more than Phantom Menace, because it has all those elements of just a fun, turn off your brain popcorn movie. It's entertaining in how bad it is, whereas Phantom Menace is just boring. As I said in my previous, or in our previous review, I would much rather something be bad and entertaining than boring and bland. Like,
exactly.
I can take a bad movie or a movie that makes me angry, like Rise of Skywalker, over a movie that I just forget about the second I'm done watching it. I will take that happily over that.
And speaking of fun, speaking of happiness, why don't you take us away with some fun facts, Amanda?
Okay. Why do I always want to say, okay, Dr. Jones? It's not, we're not doing Indiana Jones. Oh my God.
That's hilarious. Sorry, because
the last time too.
Well, because all through Avatar, you used to say, all righty then, and now it's okie dokie, Dr. Jones. Just say it. Just own it. Go ahead. It'll be cathartic for you. Just say it. Just say okie dokie, Dr. Jones.
Okie dokie, Dr. Jones. Let me short round. Glad you won an Oscar. Anyway. He'll always be short round to me.
Right.
So for our fun facts, our first fun fact is the entire aggressive negotiations conversation during the dinner scene between Anakin and Padme was ad-libbed by Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman at George Lucas' request, due to him not being very happy with the romantic dialogue that he wrote for the scene. I did not know this. It's funny because I assume that this is true, but like, it sounds like the dialogue that they decided on, that they chose to ad-lib, it sounds like something George Lucas would have written. So, like, it's just funny. It's like, I would have no idea, because it sounds like something he would have written. But maybe that just shows that they really understand his writing.
They get him. They understand the artist. When the art begins to understand the artist.
Yes.
Admittedly, I think that exchange about the aggressive negotiations is actually what some of the better, like, witty romantic talk. I think it's some of the better stuff in the movie.
I always crack up at Anakin saying grumpy. Like, Like, it's just, Master Obi-Wan, we'd be very grumpy with me. I'm just like, Anakin, what? How old are you? Who says grumpy? I love it. It's not the worst of the romantic dialogue, certainly. But it's still very stilted and awkward and cringy, which, I mean, that's what George Lucas is writing in, so it works. Mm-hmm. So for our second fun fact, I'm sure everybody knows this, but we just threw this in. Because he wanted to be able to identify himself during the Colosseum battle, Samuel L. Jackson, Mace Windu, specifically asked George Lucas if he could have a purple lightsaber. And apparently George Lucas was like, no, because lightsabers, all Jedi lightsabers are either green or blue for some reason. And then he was like, but I'll consider it, okay? And then he, I guess, decided, all right, we'll give him what he wants. And he showed Samuel L. Jackson when they had finished the effects on the lightsaber. And he was so happy. He's like, well, we did it. Which I love.
Purple is my favorite color, too. And I love his lightsaber. It's actually really funny because me being, like, you know, ears deep in the expanded universe stuff after The Phantom Menace, you know, I had guides to, like, the Jedi Council and, like, what their, all the lightsaber hilts of all the council members looked like from the visual dictionaries, et cetera, et cetera. But there was also that game that came out right afterward, kind of in the same vein as the Pod Racer game. That, like, I loved Star Wars Racer. They had a Star Wars Obi-Wan. And then they had another one. And if I'm remembering correctly what it was, because now I'm like, I think it's called Jedi Power Battles. Like, I'm going to check. Yes. Star Wars Episode 1, Jedi Power Battles. And in this game, you were able to play members of the Jedi Council, including Mace Windu. Uh-huh. And so, like, canonically, he actually in The Phantom Menace had a blue lightsaber. It was talked about, like, his lightsaber was blue. And so they had to, like, construct this whole thing between episodes 1 and 2 of how in that 10-year period he lost his lightsaber in some battle on some planet and had to replace it. And that's when he built the purple one. And I'm like, okay, cool. That's how we did things. It was the Wild West of Star Wars lore back then.
I would have pictured, like, if it had to be between blue and green for Mace Windu, I absolutely would have thought he'd have been a green. Like, am I the only one? Like, blue just doesn't seem like his color.
I don't know. Maybe that'll be the poll we'll put with this episode. Like, what if not purple, what lightsaber color would you have given Mace Windu? Blue? Or are you weird like Amanda and you think green is the appropriate color?
No, green would bring out his beautiful complexion.
it would highlight his he'd go with his eyes so well.
Yes. Oh goodness. And our third fun fact is, and I never noticed this one either, and I've seen this movie a bunch of times, but I've never noticed it.
Oh my god.
I know. I just blink right when it happens every time. When Jango Fett gets into his ship after his fight with Obi-Wan, he bangs his head on the partially open door. This was intentional, as it is a reference to the famous goof in Star Wars A New Hope, where a stormtrooper accidentally bangs his head on the door. Yeah. I've seen that one. I've seen that stormtrooper do that, but I never noticed.
How did you never see this? In the theater, the very, very first time I saw it, I, like, watched him bounce his head on the door, and I was like, oh, ha, rolls eyes. It's like a genetic thing, so the stormtroopers all bounce their head on the door.
Maybe I have noticed it, but I just kind of, like, I just never register it, I guess. Like, because I'm so used to seeing it in A New Hope, like, the stormtrooper, I like lock onto it every single time. But, like, with this, I'm just like, oh, okay, that happened, and I just don't register it. I don't know.
Admittedly, it is kind of subtle because you're not the first person to be like, okay, what happened? There's that weird sound as he's walking in the door. Like, what happens there? And I'm like, he bounces his head on the door. It's really small, but you can see it. I feel like embarrassed as a nerd to be like, oh, if you look really close, you can see it. What, you didn't see it your first time watching the movie? You're a fake fan.
Hashtag fake fan. and then I love this one. Our fourth and final fun fact. Say that five times fast. is Attack of the Clones almost had a female villain. The concept art for the movie heavily featured a bald Sith female nicknamed Dark Padme, I did not know that, during pre-production. Although it was not used in the movie, the concept would be used to create a villain well-known to Clone Wars fans, Asajj Ventress, my girl! Snap, snap, snap!
Yep.
I love Asajj. And I didn't know that she was supposed to have been originally in Attack of the Clones. Like that was when she first brought about as a concept. That's so cool.
Yep. She's in the concept art. It's so cool to see it because it's just one of those things that very much in the same vein that Star Wars Rebels sort of, you know, reach back to old Ralph McQuarrie concepts for cities and ships and characters, you know, in the same way the Clone Wars series reached back to unused character art. After all, they used pretty much exactly, like, without changing it, they used one of the concepts for Darth Maul, this really terrifying, clad in red robes, dark woman, and they used her for the Night Sisters.
Yeah.
In the Clone Wars. And so, yeah, it makes sense then they reach back to this unused but really cool female Sith concept for Attack of the Clones and turn it into Asajj Ventress for the series as well.
So, it's funny because while obviously she was most heavily featured and, like, was an actual character in the Clone Wars, I first saw Ventress in the anime, like the 2D animated, what's it called, Gendry something?
It's Gendry. Okay, so for our listeners who are familiar with the animated series, Dexter's Laboratory and Samurai Jack, those were created by Gendry Tartakovsky. And Gendry Tartakovsky also, his art style and his writing was used to create the original 2D animated Clone Wars series that aired actually between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, and that's where I first saw her, with that incredible, like, 5-minute battle between her and Anakin in the forest. Like, that shit slapped so hard. And, like, she wasn't really a character. She was just kind of an evil Sith that showed up and then died, and that was it. It's like, okay. Mm-hmm. But I was still, like, my impressionable young mind, I was like, that is a bad bitch. I love her. And, like, so when I saw her again in the Clone Wars, I was like, wait a minute, that's the one from the cartoon, the one that, like, fought Anakin in the forest. That's so cool. Yep. I thought she died. But, again, death means nothing in Star Wars, so whatever.
I was going to say, you can get cut in half and thrown down a reactor shaft, and you can still come back if you're angry enough, so.
Yep. So, anyway, yeah, love that. Love seeing Ventress.
Yep. So, yeah, so we can go ahead and dive right in then. That covers our fun facts. Amanda and I have our topics set. I mean, I'll go ahead and lead off because we talked a little beforehand about how some of our topics we want to talk about really do tie into each other. And I think one of the biggest things that, especially lately, Attack of the Clones has gained notoriety for and has been memed about for the last few years is, so Attack of the Clones has, as opposed really to the other Star Wars movies, it has a very dense mystery plot that is immediately presented at the start of the movie, and it begins to spiral out more and more. And for people who like Attack of the Clones, myself included, or my mom, who really is her favorite, like, she was literally saying this is her favorite thing about the movie at dinner tonight when we were talking about it, because I had just watched it. It starts with the assassination plot against Senator Amidala, and then from there it spirals off into finding the assassin, and it's the bounty hunter, and then they have no clue who hired the bounty hunter except for the mysterious dart that was used to kill her, and then the dart leads them to a very strange thing that's happened where the planet that the dart is from has been erased out of the Jedi archives, which is very very suspicious. Gotta say, it probably would have been less suspicious if they would have left it in.
Yeah, that's a little sus. That's,
you know,
that's weird.
And so, you know, it takes off from there, where Obi-Wan follows that clue to try to, you know, figure out the dart's origin and connect it to the person who, at the very least, the person who tried, who killed their only lead. He winds up then going to Kamino, the aforementioned planet that was erased from the Jedi archives. And then from there, he discovers the clone army and Jango Fett. And, like, everything else in the movie is set in motion. But the whole plot of, you know, Darth Sidious hires Count Dooku to hire Jango Fett to create the clone army and then kill Senator Amidala. And to do it, Jango Fett hires Zam Wessel, the shape-shifting bounty hunter, the changeling. And then she, quote-unquote, hires a droid, and the droid hires two poisonous bugs.
Yeah, I do love that video that breaks all that down. It's so funny how he just collectively loses it as he's explaining. Like, it's great. While using the Lego version of, like, the Attack of the Clones instead of the actual movie footage. It's like, why? When you break it down like that, yeah, it's kind of ridiculous, but I'm here for the assassination and the mystery plot of, like, figuring out what's going on behind the scenes and everything. Like, you know, it's interesting and engaging to me, and it leads to a lot of really good scenes, I feel like, and lots of, you know, shroud and mystery and what's going on and how does this all connect. And I like that. I like seeing those pieces kind of laid out. It's not like a great Sherlock Holmes mystery or anything, but, like, it's still interesting enough that it keeps my attention for the first, you know, two acts of the movie. And, like, I don't know. I just think that it's really fun, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but, like, I love when Obi-Wan gets to play detective, because that's mostly what he's doing, you know, in the first two acts, is he's trying to figure out this mystery. And I like that side of Obi-Wan much better than the other side of him that's in this movie. Like,
wait, hold up. What's the other side of Obi-Wan that's in this movie?
Being the grouchy, angry, like, master to Anakin. I don't like it. And I know why they did it, and this is part of my hot takes, one of them. But yeah, I don't like, aside from him being, like, the detective in the story, I don't like Obi-Wan in this movie, which is crazy because Obi-Wan is, like, one of my favorite Star Wars characters. And, like, I don't like seeing him being so angry and just short.
Hold on. Just calm down, cool it for just a second. We're going to bring you back on because I want to hear this rant. But sticking with, you know, Obi-Wan uncovering the assassination plot and it leading into the clones, that is, like, one of the best things in this movie. And I'll tell you, when I watched this movie, you know, because I saw it in theaters, and I was there when The Phantom Menace was in theaters. I heard theater reactions. I mean, heck, I went to go see The Phantom Menace like 5 times, you know. And Attack of the Clones, I think I saw Attack of the Clones in theaters at least 3 times. I think it was 3. I don't think it was 4. I think it was 3. I like audience reactions, you know, it's real, that they're very telling. And there weren't very many, like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I think the closest you ever got to that in Phantom Menace was, like, the reveal that it was actually the queen and she was just using a decoy. And there was more people in the audience that were kind of impressed, like, oh, okay, that's cool. I thought that, like, she looked kind of similar, but I wasn't sure, like, what they were doing there. Okay. That's cool. And then, like, they brought it back, of course, at the end of the movie. Attack of the Clones had a ton of moments where people were like, oh my gosh. And, like, you know, a big one, the biggest one was, we built a clone army. Mm-hmm. And did he say who it was for? Of course he did. This army is for the Republic. And everyone's like, I could hear across the theaters, people like, oh, it's not the same when you're watching the movie on the small screen, because all that silence, because there's no music. Mm-hmm. And that, by the way, quick side note, Attack of the Clones makes very good use of musicless scenes.
Mm-hmm.
A notable among them is the Colosseum fight until Anakin winds up getting control of the Reek and jumping on its back and actually riding it. There's no music from the entire start of that sequence until then. The lightsaber battle against Count Dooku also is musicless for a big portion of it. Mm-hmm. The chase in the Geonosis asteroid field until Jango Fett arms the torpedo is also without any music.
Mm.
And the scene on Kamino where he sits down and has a conversation with Lama Su, there's no music in the scene. You just hear their And like, it does kick in after a little bit, but it's like, you know, there's a big part of it. There's some silence there. And like that spot where all the stuff is coming to light about Sifo Dyas and how he was killed 10 years ago, the audience in the theaters were just like, oh shoot. Oh, wow.
I don't think I ever had that reaction, but maybe you're right. It might just be like, cause I never saw it in theaters. Like, so I didn't get the full audience feedback reaction. I agree that they do use very good use of music, and the music just in general, like with all the prequel movies, is just top notch. Like, just as an aside, like Across the Stars, mm-hmm. one of the best pieces of Star Wars music, period.
The plot line is something that people like make fun of, but I think the thing about it is it makes sense in universe, because like, let's face it, like if you were some high ranking person who like your plans to take over the galaxy hinged on you not being discovered, you would definitely have a lot of alibis and a lot of fall guys along the way. Mm-hmm. And like assassinating somebody who stands in the way of your army being created to get your whole war plan going, it does serve you to have a lot of fall guys between the act and you, as many people as you can put, where everyone is hired by somebody else and nobody knows who's actually at the top, is mm-hmm. like a perfect strategy. It's actually quite brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, it's complicated and convoluted, but it makes sense. I just remembered. So when I did actually finally see the movie, you know, a couple of years after it was released in theaters, when I was old enough to watch it and understand it, I do remember that there was one moment that I was shocked by, and it was literally the opening scene, because, you know, the opening scene, this kind of ties in with the whole assassination plot, is the beginning of the assassination plot with, right. you know, the blowing up of, you know, Padme's ship and all that, and her handmaiden Cordae, I believe, was yep. taking her place, and she was dressed like her and all that. So for a split second, I thought that they killed Padme. I was like, oh my God, not Padme.
You're just there in the first like 5 minutes of the movie going, this is how Anakin goes to the dark side. This is how it happens. He finds out she dies in the first like 2 minutes of the movie.
That would have been wild, yeah. But yeah, so I was shocked, and then obviously she showed up, and I was like, oh, okay, she's fine. Then who cares? But like, but yeah, no, that was a good, nice, I guess, twist, like right at the very beginning, kind of throw the audience off guard, be like, oh, okay, so this is what we're in for, is an assassination plot on this character. All right,
yeah,
I'm here for it. But yeah, and I, like I said, I love that the plot leads to so many, what are they called? Like different worlds and different like scenes. So, you know, for instance, when they're trying to find out information, they're going to this bar, and I love the bar scene. You hope I have the best six. It's great. And then you get from the bar, you get a great chase scene. And I love the chase scene. Oh my God, it's so fun. Like that's what pod racing should have been. Don't at me. Is the chase scene in Coruscant at night. They're like jumping from cabs in the midair, and like Anakin just flinging himself out. Excuse me. I love it. Oh my God. It's so fun.
Yeah. You know why it worked? Because there wasn't some two-headed announcer shouting out every single thing going on. And there goes Skywalker into a dive again.
Yeah. And Obi-Wan does not look happy.
Like, exactly. Why did you sound like the announcer from the start of the Legend of Korra episode?
Play me out, Hotman. It's just ingrained in me at this point. I love all of that, and I love Zam Wessel, like the chase with her, and all of that stuff is really fun. It doesn't just feel like fluff or like just a bunch of random scenes. Like that's kind of what I feel mm-hmm. with Phantom Menace, why it doesn't work so much for me, is that yeah, things happen, but a lot of the scenes I feel like you could either cut down or cut out completely and you wouldn't miss anything. Whereas this this movie, like, if a scene, usually a scene feeds into something, whether it's a reveal or a new mystery that they have to solve, like, you know, everything kind of feeds into each other. And yeah, it's very clunky, but at least it still has some form of a linear story going on.
It's action packed. They're not wasting minutes of the movie. Like, everything that, like, as soon as they're done with one thing that's moved us forward, we immediately switch scenes to, you know, because there's a lot of switching back and forth in this movie between Anakin and Padme off on Naboo or Tatooine or wherever they're going, because they really jet set around. It was kind of a buddy cop comedy that way. But then you've got Obi-Wan with his adventures off on Coruscant and eventually Kamino and then eventually a Geonosis, and you're switching back and forth a lot. But no, there's really no, like, fat to be trimmed off of the movie. It's all very, you know, essential stuff in every scene, something that's moving it forward. It's very tight. It's quickly paced. And the movie doesn't drag. It keeps on moving. That's for sure.
I mean, I kind of disagree with that last part, but yeah, we'll get to that later.
Okay, well, let me throw this out for you. The only part where I really feel like the movie drags at all for me is after the whole exhilarating chase through Coruscant, and then we're back in the Jedi Council chambers, and they're like, okay, it's time to escort the senator back to Naboo, and then we're sitting in her room, and we're talking about how Obi-Wan doesn't understand, and we're whining, and, oh, don't look at me like that, Anakin, why not? It makes me uncomfortable. And I'm just thinking, like, oh my God, can we get on with this movie already? Like, that's the only part of the movie that I feel really, truly drags, is that part right there. Like, starting with Zam Wessel dying, and when do I think the movie really even actually picks up? Probably like when they actually reach Naboo and kiss, because isn't, like, the next thing that happens for Obi-Wan him, like, arriving on Kamino?
I think so, yeah.
Because that's when the movie, like, picks back up, but there's like a chunk there of the movie, at least 10 minutes, that just feels like it's a half hour long.
Right. Well, I guess what about that's... you? I mean, for me, the entire final act is the part that drags. Like, listen, I am here for the first two acts. I love the first two acts of the movie, as clunky and messy as they are. I really do like them. I love the romance, even though it's terrible. I love the mystery and the assassination plot and detective work. Like, I love all that. I'm here for that. The second that they get all of them, you know, to Geonosis, my brain shuts off. It is so dull and so boring. And, like, I feel like, and I get why they did it. Like, I don't know. It's just...
Okay. I told you before the podcast that maybe we'll save this for the next episode, but I can tell it's ready to just burst out of you. So you know what? Heck with it. Give us your hot take and your general grievance, and I am, like, here for this, because you are literally telling me that the climax of the movie,
the literal
end battle, is for you the worst and most dragging part of the movie. So, like, go ahead and have the floor on this one, because this might be one of the hottest takes we'll get.
I don't really have much of a reason. It's just, for me, again, I was here for the first two acts, and then I feel like they drop all of it, basically, by the third act, when they get to Geonosis, which, by the way, like, I get that it's a real, quote-unquote, set. Like, you know, they built all these tunnels and cool things. That's not the problem. The problem is that, visually, I don't like it. Like, it's just this brown-orange planet, and it's very uninteresting looking to me. I understand that they actually built it, and that's really cool, but, like, this is a bug world. Make it look cool. Like, so that's the first thing. Visually, it does not stimulate me.
You don't like the Cheeto planet?
No, I don't. Sorry.
Amazing.
I know.
I wonder why.
Yeah. And
I mean, let me ride that point for just a second, though, because we do know, as soon as you make everything tinted all one color, Amanda's rating of it drops, like, significantly. Her interest level goes down. Like, she needs colors of variety. Color. Like, yes, moldy orange is not your favorite.
Oh, no. This is When we get to Solo, I will have a lot to say about the color palette of that disgusting looking movie. But anyway, disgusting.
But let's acknowledge that, like, that's a valid point by Amanda's standards, because I mean, the whole rest of the movie beforehand, Ms. Millwood, you are spoiled by brilliant sparkling Coruscant with lush, you know, the sunset, sunrises, the ocean and fields of Naboo, the golden deserts of Tatooine, and the blood red sunsets and the indigo nights. You've got the crashing gray waves of Kamino with the dark skies and the lightning. It is a visual fest. And then they're just like, hey, how about we drop you here in the planet of nacho cheese dust for like the entire last 45 minutes of the movie?
Please don't. Like, and, you know, the second that they get into the stupid warehouse, like, because I'm pretty sure that's the first, I'm pretty sure I've seen this movie like a bunch of times, but the timeline still is weird to me. So they get to this warehouse, right? And they fight off the droids, and Anakin gets its arm stuck under the thing. Like,
oh, the droid factory? I was scratching my head, which means about the warehouse, the droid factory.
Say warehouse? It is a warehouse.
This is not, this, Amanda, this, the third act is not the third act of Korra season one. That's where the warehouse was.
Oh my God. The second that scene starts, I'm like, okay. I'm bored. I don't like this. This looks awful. I have no investment in this whatsoever. And then they kind of get me back a little bit just with the single scene of Anakin and Padme before they get sent out to be killed in the Colosseum. And it's mostly just the music, because the swell of the music as they like ride out is incredible. And then, you know, they get chained up and you get the funny line from Obi-Wan, you know, the good job. I love that.
Yep.
But then everything else, I'm just like, what are these animal creature hybrid thingies? What's going on? And then, you know, they beat them somehow. Like, all right. And How to Train Your Dragon them, you know, get to ride them and all that. And I'm like, what is happening right now? And then all the Jedi show up. It's, it literally reminds me of Spy Kids 3D Game Over, where they call in the entire family at the last second, and it's just like Avengers Endgame. I'm just like, who are these Jedi? We don't know any of them. Why do we care? And then I'm watching individual Jedi that, you know, at least are visually cool looking, but like the actual choreography is terrible. Like, if you really watch them, like, yeah. If you don't pay attention to individual fighters like I do, like, it's like, okay, it's just a bunch of glow sticks. Like, it has
right.
no...
Right.
But then you start to really hone in on different characters or actors, and you see that they don't know what they're doing. They're just like, I'm just swinging this sword around. I don't know what I'm hitting, if anything. Mm-hmm. And it's so distracting. I don't like it. And then the clones.
Admittedly, it is pretty low. It is pretty low effort there. And you know, one of the reasons why that was, is that part of the production of the final battle was that the Jedi that were there were not stunt performers. Most of them were like prop makers, like the two guys who throw Anakin and Obi-Wan their lightsabers to free themselves. They're like prop designers who got a cameo. It's like the production crew got like put into makeup, and they're like stand in front of a green screen and do some like spins and saber swings and like pretend you're fighting stuff that isn't there. It wasn't like choreographed stunt performers and stuntmen, like they didn't dress Nick Gillard up and like have him fight a whole bunch of people. And they just there's sense, nothing then. Professional about it.
That actually makes a ton of sense. Things just started clicking. But then I think, like, okay, like that makes sense, but at the same time I'm thinking of Lord of the Rings that came out right at the same time, where they had literal just randos that they picked up off the street in New Zealand, and they're like, we're gonna put you in a ton of makeup and you're gonna ride a horse into battle and it's gonna look fucking awesome.
Hey, putting you on a horse But even a horse in armor, there's no way you can't look cool as one of the, you know.
And I'm like, or you're going to be in orc makeup and you're going to swing this axe and it's going to hit a horse and the guy's going to go flying off. And I'm just like, that's so fucking cool. But like, yeah, it just did not translate in Star Wars for that to just pick up a rando and be like, yep, you're going to fight. You're a Jedi now. It's like, yep. Okay. But yeah, so the whole final act, I do not like. That's, I usually turn it off, honestly. Like if I'm doing a rewatch of the prequels, I will skip the entire final act and just go straight to the end where, you know, Anakin and Padme get married and the big reveal of the clone army and all that. And like, I will just skip the entire 30, 40 minutes of Geonosis because I do not like it.
Which is wild because it's like the action sequence of the movie.
It's a bad like, one. I'm sorry. Like, I wanted to be hyped to see all these Jedi, you know, fighting, but it just looks terrible.
That moment when the CGI looks better than the live action elements.
Honestly.
And bearing in mind, on that same note, like, you want to talk about how, what's the word I'm thinking of? Like, slapped together some of those elements were for that final battle for the third act. Additional fun fact, let's not forget some of the biggest pop culture collisions at the time was the rumor that NSYNC was going to have a cameo in Attack of the Clones because they were massive at the time. It was 2002. And it's true. Now, if I remember correctly, it wasn't all the members of NSYNC. There was, I think, three of them, if I remember right, that were going to be in there. Which ones, it doesn't matter. Look it up yourself. But, like, there were three members of NSYNC that were supposed to be in the final battle, and that's where they were going to be. They were going to be tossed in as extra Jedi with Jedi robes and lightsabers swinging them around. And, like, useless cameo of people being like, look, that is Justin Timberlake with a lightsaber. It's like, cool. I don't care. Nobody cares. It didn't make the final cut of the film. I don't know if they even actually filmed it, but yeah, that was a thing that was actually supposed to happen. And NSYNC talks about how like it never happened.
Yeah, I had heard about NSYNC being or potentially being in Star Wars, and I think it was because George Lucas's daughter was a huge fan of them, and that's like why I think that she had asked him or something like that. Like, so I think it's cool. I bet that there is like lost footage or lost pictures of them at like a costume fitting, like that they did get to that point, but we just never ended up seeing
what it was?
Like the final product.
I don't know how well that would have aged.
Yeah, most people of my, well, not my age, but like maybe my sister's age would be like, who are they? Like, who's NSYNC?
Was the significance? And then all of us in the nursing home, like, look, it's Justin Timberlake, it's Chris Kirkpatrick, he's a Jedi.
Oh, are they like One Direction? I don't know who the biggest boy band is right now. That was the last one I could think of.
Oh my gosh, you are an old lady. One Direction is, oh my gosh, Ms. Millwood, One Direction is like so 2011.
Yeah. Well, I was in middle school in 2010, so that is,
last point you touched base with the music, pop music world.
Yeah, basically. Couldn't get away from it.
Well, you know, on that same note, since I will kind of jump in on this, you know, talking about the clones and the mysterious assassination plot that then culminates in the final battle that you hate, which again is wild that you don't like it. But I get all your reasons why. I get all the reasons why. Again, you know, there's a lot of things in the prequels that are like, this looks really, really good, except for that, you know, there's major flaws in a lot of things that, again, like you said, it's kind of a matter of if I'm not looking too close, but sometimes it's just too distracting to not notice it. On that note, I want to deviate a little bit off of what we get in the movie and into some things that we didn't get, because this was something that at the time leading up to the movie, which again, you were four, so you clearly weren't, you didn't know much of a pre-Attack of the Clones world. This will also be relevant very much in the Revenge of the Sith review we make, but I want to make sure I'm reminding you of something. There's a lot of lore that was created by various sources affiliated with, you know, Lucasfilm and, you know, given license to talk about a lot of things that were referenced in the original movies before the prequels came out, including very pivotal things like the Clone Wars. What were they about? And the fall of Darth Vader in like the vaguest terms. Those right. were some things that were off, you know, off the table that George Lucas was like, okay, you can talk about how Anakin fell to the dark side in like a little bit more detail, but like, you know, and they were just, it was all off of George's own words at the time. You know, he modified it so that it was different than the way he originally described it and different than the way it was originally depicted previously, before the prequels, when he actually made the movies. And one of the things that was a big point of kind of like non-discussion was what was the Clone Wars? And so there was a ton of speculation coming leading up to the Clone Wars and or leading up to Attack of the Clones, which was, okay, we know that this is where the Clone Wars begin. So here comes all the speculation. And here's a bit of something that threw us off. You know, Star Wars fans weren't thrilled in The Phantom Menace when the primary bad guys were a bunch of blaster carrying Tinker Toys with funny voices.
Rider.
Right. We've been spoiled on like Imperial Stormtroopers of all different varieties. And we're like, cool, where are the real bad guys? Because we've caught on by now, Phantom Menace was a movie for little kids and they had, you know, droids with funny voices so that the Jedi could chop through them. There wouldn't be any blood or anything like that. Wouldn't scare them out of the theater. Okay. But like, this is war. This is like the Clone Wars. So like, how do the clones factor in? And one of the big suppositions about the Clone Wars is kind of like a what if of Star Wars that we're going to bring up here. What if the clones weren't the good guys serving the Republic and eventually segued into stormtroopers? What if the threat to the Republic was that the army is of the enemy, having no standing army to go against the mighty Galactic Republic and its military forces led by the Jedi? What if they resorted to creating clones to make their army? And that was always the idea that many Star Wars fans had, which is, oh, I know why the war was so terrible, because the Jedi faced this moral dilemma of, do I kill this person? They're an enemy carrying a gun coming at me. I'm not supposed to kill. I'm a Jedi. I'm supposed to respect life. But like, this life was cooked up in a lab. It's one guy multiplied into millions of soldiers and they're all programmed to kill. What do I do? What are your thoughts on that? Because I don't know how much you knew of that, but that was like a big thing leading up to the Clone Wars. And that's a little bit of why it took us all by surprise that we were like, wait, the clone army is for the Republic? Well, how does that work? And then they all march out in stormtrooper armor, basically. And we're like, they're stormtroopers. Well, clone troopers, but basically they're stormtroopers. I don't, what's your thought on like the, what could have been had it been flipped the other way?
I don't know. Cause like, I
have
would
you,
never...
have you heard of this before?
No. So I don't
this
really
is a
have...
fresh take. This is a fresh yeah. take. No, but spin on this, riff on this for a second.
I mean, I think that the clone, like the idea of the clones being, you know, from obviously, like it doesn't really matter who it's, they're obviously from Jango Fett, but like being from a single person that, you know, that were made to fight the Republic, but had a secret, basically like trigger word that causes them to go, you know, all AWOL. Like, I think that's a really cool idea. And, you know, a very clever part on Palpatine's plan, you know, the long game. He's always planned for the long game. And, you know, and I think that that's something that was greatly expanded on and made better by the Clone Wars animated series was because we don't care about the clones in, you know, the prequels. We don't. Like, and people that say that they do are lying. You care about the clones from the Clone Wars show, and you just kind of map that onto them, because they are not characters. They are props.
They're props. They're drones. They're not even a real. FYI, every single clone mm-hmm. trooper in Attack of the Clones is a CGI character. Okay. They're not even. They're not even people in armor.
Yeah. So, like, I think that that was probably the most brilliant thing that Dave Filoni could have done was take these clones that had no personalities, no names, no anything, no real characteristics of any sort, and making them actual, real, feel. Like feeling characters that have their own individual personalities and feelings and all that. And so, you know, again, within the confines of just the prequels, it's a cool idea, the clones. I don't care about them at all. I've never really thought about them outside of just their role within the story, or like what could have been if, you know, things were had been done differently in the script or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I really love Kamino though. Kamino, like the whole scene in Kamino, you know, the long sequence from when Obi-Wan arrives to when he leaves and after his fight with Jango Fett. Like, I love it. I love the aliens. What are they called? The Kaminoans?
The Kaminoans, yes. Yeah. My brother's favorite aliens in Star Wars. Like, he loves the Kaminoans. They're so cool. Yeah,
they're one of my favorite too. I just love how like soothing their voices are, how cool they look, their big old eyes, how they look kind of like what we think aliens would look like, but also like more human. Like it's cool.
In like in UFO talk culture, they refer to that type of alien with like the long necks and like the plain gray flesh and the big black bulbous eyes. They're called the Greys.
Yes. I did know that in the back of my mind, and you just reminded me of that. So I do love all that. And I love, again, just the backstory with the clones. And I actually really like Temuera Morrison as Jango Fett. Like, I do not like him as Boba Fett, but I don't like Boba Fett, so like, it's not his fault. But I do genuinely find him much more menacing as Jango Fett. Just like this, like, and I don't really like this character type, but I think it works for Jango Fett to be this kind of stoic, silent. But also, he wants a kid. Like, that's kind of interesting. Like, I really like that Boba was an altered version of his clone that wouldn't rapidly grow and like kind of had his own personality and all that and grew into his own person.
He's basically just he's a child produced out of a laboratory and just he doesn't have any growth acceleration or any personality modification or anything like that to make him more likely to follow orders like the clones do.
But he's still a clone, right? Like,
he's a clone. In the movie, they say that he requested a one unaltered clone for himself. So no growth acceleration, nothing. He would mature like a normal child at a normal human rate. He asks for a clone. So he essentially is like a child to him that's just created out of his DNA. So
okay, now that we're talking about this, this is the show we could have gotten instead of the Book of Boba Fett. Do a freaking prequel series with Jango and young Boba and like it'd be like The Mandalorian but with humans where they're going around being a bounty hunter but they're actually bad people, like instead of doing the kind of anti-hero I'm a good guy deep down, like no, just be bad. And like I would watch that because Jango is so much cooler than Boba anyway.
That was the closest this is the closest Amanda will ever get to doing a review of Book of Boba Fett. So like thank you for that right there.
Awful, do not recommend.
That would have been awesome. Like honestly, anything they would have done different than Book of Boba Fett, like anything would have been better. Like it would have just been keeping up with the Fetts. Like it would have been great.
Yeah, I would have watched
meet the Fetts.
Yes.
One of the things that I do like that is a messy, very messy part of the plot. One thing that's a very messy part of the plot, which having the clones like on the other side of the war actually would have addressed and like kind of made better. No, I get it. Anything that was like messy from Attack of the Clones, they fixed it in the Clone Wars, basically. Mm-hmm. Like they did right by everybody. They patched up even the, and this is something that could almost wait for the Revenge of the Sith episode, but like, why not? You know, they had a very different idea in mind with the whole Sifo Dyas being the person, the Jedi who came and ordered the clones. They made it in the Clone Wars where they're like, oh, he was this Jedi who was paranoid and thought that the Republic, you know, needed an army and all this stuff. And he came and he requested the clones, and then he was killed. And then like he created the clone army, and Sidious kind of looked at it and was like, oh, cool idea. And like hijacked his thing, which is kind of weird in my opinion. I never really cared for that patch up job that the Clone Wars series did by like making Sifo Dyas responsible, because the original idea in the movie was, sure, there was a Jedi named Sifo Dyas, and he just almost a misstep, but more as an audience cue to know what was going on. He would have been murdered, assassinated by Darth Sidious, and then Darth Sidious in his guise would have gone to the Kaminoans and been like, hi, I'm a Jedi from the Jedi Council. My name is Sifo Dyas. Ha ha ha. What do you know? Just so happens to be really close to my real name, Sidious. Ha ha. Wink at the movie audience. No one else gets the correlation, which is very obvious. That was going to be, and they were actually going to reveal that in Revenge of the Sith. But by that time they were like, you know what? Forget it. There's not enough time to reconcile it. I actually like the original idea better. Like, it's true, nobody would have cared, but like it coming to light, it just kind of would have been this big like head smack moment. Like, how did we not get that Sifo Dyas and Sidious are the same person? Wow.
How did this happen? We're smarter than this.
Apparently not. But you know, but like that, as I say, or as I started to say, it would have fixed a little bit one thing that I never really cared for, which is the Republic never thought twice about the fact that the army was created with a very mysterious means. Sure, a Jedi requested the army be created. Wow, I guess it kind of puts the Jedi's blessing on it, like in an unspoken way. But then we're like, but the guy who was hired, no one thought twice about the fact that they're like, so you were hired by Sifo Dyas too, or you were hired by, and he's like, no, I was hired by Tyrannus. And they're like, huh? And all the closest they ever get is curious. And then they never like talk about it again.
Let's just move on.
Right. If the clones were on the bad guy's side, it kind of would have meshed more, because like Count Dooku would have been revealed to be Darth Tyrannus. Not that he ever is, like it always takes place behind the scenes as far as I know. Darth Tyrannus hired Jango Fett to be the donor to create a clone army for his side of the war, rather than like the Republic just kind of looking the other way, that the guy who's, you know, genes the clones are all made from was hired under very, very dubious circumstances. At least if in that sort of alternate, if they had stuck to the original idea of the clones being the enemies of the Jedi, it also would have synced a little better with like the Mandalorians being the enemies of the Jedi during the war.
Right. Yeah, I guess that would make sense. But again, I've never really thought that deeply about it.
it definitely would have like fulfilled a little bit of the original lore. I sure like it the way it is, but thinking back on ideas and storylines that had been proposed for the Clone Wars is an interesting thought there. So now, incidentally, since you had touched on it, I might as well let you entirely off the leash with the time we have left. You talked about how you don't like Obi-Wan in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like part of him in the movie. Like I said, Obi-Wan is one of my favorite Star Wars characters, like, period. Like, top five for sure. So to see him be so, in Anakin's words, grumpy and angry and just, like, I don't know, just kind of bitter for most of the movie, at least when he's with Anakin, it's just unpleasant and I don't like it. Like, I get what they were going for, because, you know, obviously this is causing a rift between them, but at the same time, if they were going to do that, which, I mean, they did, but like, if you were going to have a rift form between Anakin and Obi-Wan, this should have happened in Revenge of the Sith. Like, and I understand that, oh, well, it's more tragic because, like, they're actually really close now, and that makes the separation, you know, the betrayal that much deeper. And I'm like, I get it. But also, if you have Obi-Wan, you know, acting the way he does in Attack of the Clones or Revenge of the Sith, it makes more sense as to why Anakin would pull away, why he would feel distant from Obi-Wan. And, like, you know, the resentment for him would grow even deeper. And it's just like, I don't know. I never really liked it. Like I said, I love when he's playing detective. When he's just by himself without Anakin, when he's get away from that bratty teenager.
He's better. I think Obi-Wan feels the exact same way. I think he would be like, girlfriend, I totally agree with you. That kid, I makes me want to lie down in a hot bath and cry.
Literally. Yeah, I mean, there's not really much more to say about it. I don't like grouchy Obi-Wan. I like him much better when he's, you know, the hopeful master and the, you know, the friend to Anakin and the mentor and all that. Like, that's my favorite kind of Obi-Wan. So seeing him just so bitter and angry, don't like it.
I think it would have been really funny if Palpatine, like, after turning Vader to the dark side, just wound up having the exact same trouble with Vader that Obi-Wan had with Anakin. They're just there, and you know, Palpatine gets the report of, like, there could be a rebel presence on the planet as they're setting up a garrison, and as the, you know, the general is talking to the Emperor is just like, you know, well, we won't succeed on mandate on the planet to get the garrison set up. Don't worry about any rebels. And Vader's just sitting next to him on the couch and be like, we will destroy any rebel presence here, I promise you. And he's like, well, Vader, killing the rebels is implied in our mandate.
Just immediately think back to the Palpatine talking on the phone with Vader skit from a Robot Chicken.
That's exactly the Palpatine and Vader I'm thinking of, just the stop motion Robot Chicken Star Wars.
The best version, Palpatine, don't at me. Yeah, that all of that is completely canon in my mind, by the way. Like, that all of that happened.
I'm definitely going to have more to say about Obi-Wan, but that's going to wait until part two of this podcast. So we will have that for you guys next week.
That's all for today. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode, so feel free to leave a review or comment, follow the podcast, give us a good rating, and all that good stuff.
You can find us on Instagram at Millwood and Micah Podcast, and don't forget that our sweet podcast merch is available on TeePublic. Thanks again, and we'll be back in the next episode.